Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
Yes, it's Friday at 3:05. That can only mean one thing. The greatest slot in Irish radio, Movies and Booze. This is John Fardy in for Sean today. I'm delighted to be joined in studio by Fionnuala Joe. See, we practiced it beforehand.
Oh, whatever you call me.
You tell them your name.
So, Fionnuala Jones.
Fionnuala Jones, Michelle Lawler and Chris Wasser. You should never check names. Michelle's going to be talking about some wines. Chris is going to be talking about some hopefully great movies. And Fionnuala Jones is going to be telling us what's going on in the world of show business. You're all very welcome.
Hey.
Good afternoon, guys.
How are you?
Let's do a quick potpourri around. Michelle, what wines are we going to be talking about?
We are going to be talking about the biggest wine trends of the summer.
Oh, okay.
So we have a sparkling white, a Pet Nat, which is delicious. And the label is pretty quirky. She's like a spicy Betty Boo.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Filthy gorgeous, you could say. And then a liter bottle of red Vin de Soif from southern France, which you can serve chilled. So I did put it in the fridge for 3 hours before I left. But then it took me 2 hours to get here. So possibly closer to room temperature.
But the only relation between these two wines is that they're on trend this summer.
That's it.
Okay.
Yeah. And also the kids go back next week. So you kind of need something to celebrate with, which can either be a litre of wine or something fizzy.
I couldn't possibly comment. Chris, what movies are up for discussion today?
Movies up for discussion are The Life of Chuck, which is another Mike Flanagan Stephen King adaptation. He's already given us two. Mike Flanagan is a filmmaker who's best known for his horror output and has adapted before Dr. Sleep, the sequel to The Shining, and Gerald's Game, another Stephen King novel. This time he is pushing aside the horror for something a whole lot sweeter and a whole lot more sentimental with Tom Hiddleston. So that's the first one we're going to look at. And the second is Nobody 2, where you have Bob Odenkirk returning for a sequel as where he gets to play basically America's unlikeliest action man, because he's not somebody when you see him in any other project you think that guy, you know, could kick ass. He actually does, and he's got his own action franchise now.
Excellent. And Fionnuala, what, give us a top line of some of the stuff
people
up for discussion.
Are not happy about who is reportedly going to be playing Sinead O'Connor. Ooh. Who's the favourite, although I will say when I dug into this I think it's like less clear, and I think people should maybe calm down, but we'll talk about it. And also very exciting news about True Detective season 5. Well, I think it's exciting because of who's potentially involved.
Oh, we'll talk
about it all later.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Sinead O'Connor biopic. You can understand why people might be very protective
totally,
of that, particularly
yeah, totally.
From where we are today. Michelle, why don't we kick off then with our first wine? Would you like to go red or white?
We're going to go for the sparkling, which is the Pet Nat. And you can see from your glass that it's pretty cloudy. More, I would say, akin to an apple juice. And this is part of the Pet Nat style, and definitely more yellowy. And so the reason why it's cloudy is that it's Pet Nat, which is petulant natural, which is how it's made. So if you think about the difference between Pet Nat, which is the oldest way, older than making how you would make champagne, of producing sparkling wine, champagne and cava are produced when you ferment the wine once. So you end up with like a regular Sauvignon Blanc or a regular Semillon or whatever it might be. And then you add a bit of yeast and a bit of sugar and it ferments a second time. But with Pet Nat, what's amazing about it is that they, when it's in the middle of fermenting, and if you were to ever see a wine fermenting, it literally looks like a kettle boiling.
Okay.
Bubble, 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 bubble. And what they do to make a Pet Nat is halfway through that process, they just put a lid in it. Literally, and capture all those natural bubbles. So there's no added sugar, no added anything. It's as close to nature as you can possibly get. And I would say it's a semi-sparkling. So when you think about champagne, cava, fully sparkling Prosecco, there's €6.40 tax before VAT on that. Whereas, and that's the tax they put on fully sparkling wines. And when I say they, I mean the government. Boo. but for a Pet Nat, like a Prosecco Frizzante, it's, because the bubbles are below a certain threshold, it is taxed as a regular wine. And that's what you get with that. So the grapes in this particular one, has everyone had a taste? Anyone like
it?
Yeah, really nice.
It is so lovely. What I love about it is
the,
how
the
creamy.
Fizziness, sorry to cut across, but the fizziness is mild. It's not highly bubbly.
So it's semi-sparkling. And that's how they can get away with the single tax on this particular one. Because the bubbles on a champagne or a cava are like highly sparkling. fizzy, whereas this is kind of, I would say, like a semi-sparkling wine. And when you say something is semi-sparkling, it doesn't necessarily mean that it's better or worse. It's just a fact on the style of the bar pressure in it. So this particular one, my lovely, filthy, gorgeous lady, is Semillon and Sauvignon Blanc. So Sauvignon Blanc being the international grape, there's a grape called Semillon, which you only really find in Bordeaux. So this is a classic white Bordeaux blend produced in Bergerac, so just outside of Bordeaux. So they're the classic grape from that region. And these guys, their grandfather was a really famous wine producer. And then the next gen came along. Now, rumour has it, they had an argument. So they kind of split in two. So one section of the family make very classic Berger, like Bordeaux style wines. And the other kind of fragment of the family are into the natural, cool, trendy, no added sulfur, non-filtered, non-fined.
Under different brands, presumably.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is called Albert de Conti Petnat. So different names, but and they produce totally different wines, but they've got that huge family legacy around it. And Petnat, if you're not sure you've tried a Petnat or you're curious, they're really easy to identify because if you have a look at this bottle, you can see it's closed with a crown cap, like a beer cap. So actually, a lot of times when people come into our shop and they'll be like, oh, can I have that bottle of beer? It's not a bottle of beer. So they're because the bubbles aren't that high in them, they don't need like that champagne mushroom closure with the foil and the coil and all the bits and bobs because the bubbles, the pressure in it isn't actually that high. But look, they're seriously popular, I suppose, on the market in a big way, about 15 years. But in the hotspots in New York, Paris, London. And as the years have gone on, they've become a lot more mainstream to the point where we sell more of this than we sell Prosecco. Okay. And I do not say that lightly. People have just, I suppose, there's a couple of things. When you think about Prosecco, most people think hangover. They're nearly like hand in hand. Whereas in actual fact, when you go for a Petnat, because it's like nothing added, nothing taken away, you get a very clean, clear, closer to nature production in wine. So these are bone dry. Whereas when you're producing champagne or cava or Prosecco, you add sugar in to kickstart that second ferment. And you know when you see the word dry written on a Prosecco bottle, that's a legal term for sugar. No joke. Wow. 17 to 32 grams of sugar per litre in a dry, when it says dry on the label. So these Petnats are definitely in that. And you can taste it. Like, it is quite dry.
Oh, it's very dry.
Very dry.
So are we saying Petnat minimal hangover?
Yeah. Look, I mean, it's still alcohol, drink water, be drinkware, all those things. Yes. But definitely there's a thing where part of a hangover is that dehydration from having too much sugar.
Yeah.
And because these are produced, and I would nearly say they're like a microbrew in a, for like a bottle of beer, they're produced line by line with the cap on them. Whereas when you produce something like a Prosecco, they can be produced in absolutely huge volumes. So if you think of like a tank the size of Stephen's Green Shopping Centre, imagine producing wine in that volume. And because wine is alive, I know it's a mad concept, but here we are. And so when you think of wine being produced in that volume, because grape juice is alive, like it's just been fermented grapes, it can spoil. And so the risk management on something in a really large volume is additives, sulfur, etc. And so and sugar, all those things that helps, I suppose, keep a wine in those huge volumes going. So if you go for something a bit like, I suppose, produced in smaller volumes, you're going to end up with, a lot better of a...
So that is the Albert de Conti Petnat. Nuala, or see, I've done it. What is it about your name?
I don't know. Fee, FJ.
Yeah, I know. We'll tap it out phonetically. Fionnuala, did you enjoy the Petnat?
I loved it. It was really, really nice.
Okay. Tell, after this car crash of your name, tell us about... Who's tipped possibly for the Sinead O'Connor biopic? Okay. When is the Sinead O'Connor biopic starting or when is it out?
I don't think we know when it's starting, but the report suggests that it's been in the works since the documentary Nothing Compares, which came out in 2022.
Which is a terrific documentary.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Would encourage people to check that out if they haven't. And it's coming from the same producer, Seesaw Films, and Nine Daughters. And basically, this had been reported in Variety last week. And then this week, there were other reports. I think it kind of mainly stemmed from this report from The Sun that is naming sources. This is why I'm kind of like,
come on, get to it.
They're basically putting forward Natalie Portman as the hot favourite to play Sinead O'Connor, which just caused a lot of consternation online because, I don't know, there's been a lot of names bandied about over the years, like previews of the name, Saoirse Ronan, other people, stuff like that. People's other main issue seems to be that it's like, it should be an Irish actor because, you know, it's a difficult accent and people struggle with it and all that jazz. Also, I feel like, I don't know where some people just, you know, she shaved her head for V for Vendetta and she she does look like her, I will say, with the shaved head. She does look like her. I see the similarities. But I don't know if people are just taking that and being like, oh yeah, perfect. That she embodies the role now. Like, it's a lot more than a Sinead was obviously so much more than a shaved head. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
So that's why I'm kind of like, there are a lot of reports about this. Pinch of salt, I would say, just based on, because there's no, when I went back to check the Variety piece, there's nothing that said, suggests anything around casting, anyone around who they're talking to. So
it may be just hearsay.
A little bit, yeah, maybe, or else maybe they're in the room being like, yeah, we'd love Natalie Portman. But like, I mean, I don't know. I think in these cases, are we not better off going for a slightly unknown, because Natalie Portman, is there also an argument that it's like, it's too, she's too famous. Like, she's too famous in her own right, as Sinead was so famous in her own right, that it's kind of hard to separate them. And I know that's the skill in the actor, but I think, I don't know, I think it, you get into tricky territory then.
Have you an idea of who it should be? Not an idea, but who do you think would work? I mean, is Saoirse Ronan a...
See, Saoirse, when I read people kind of positing Saoirse, Saoirse's obviously an incredible actor, but like... I don't know necessarily about her. Like, it's so difficult with Sinead because she was so much beyond music, an activist, like everything like that. The difficulties she's had in her own, like, she contains a multitude, as do most people. And as you said, we're so precious about her as a figure in Irish history and Irish culture at large that I feel like kind of whoever is casted, I might be like, I feel like everyone will be like, I don't know, not happy with it, which is why I am kind of like, I think maybe to go for someone who... Not who's never done anything, but like, give them a shot at it.
I know what you mean.
You know, it's
let me canvas opinion, Chris, Michelle.
I think, in my opinion, the Natalie Portman story is someone in the newsroom just coming up with something to get people talking like they're doing now.
I don't think that's ever.
That's never going to happen in a million years. I think as well, we can't really get down the route of it should be an Irish actor, because we were given out when the Beatles film was cast that people kept saying it should be Liverpool actors. Like, you don't have to be from that place. I don't think at all. I think it will probably go to an unknown. But I think the other issue is, don't make the film, at least not yet. I don't think it should be done yet.
Too soon?
I think it is too soon, yeah.
Michelle, any thoughts?
I'm totally in contradiction to Chris. I think it should be an Irish actress.
Okay.
For sure. I just feel like there's an authenticity there about a known and shared history. Now, I know whoever comes along won't have been around in the 90s, most likely, for that, but... I feel like there's a piece of shared history.
Yeah. And she matters so much to us all, and continues to nearly matter more as history kind of retakes her.
I think it'd be hard to be anywhere outside of Ireland. I feel like you're way, like, wide open for criticism over who she should be.
Yeah.
A good text in, Jesse Buckley for Sinead O'Connor biopic.
Yeah, because she can sing.
Great singer.
Terrific singer, yeah.
I don't know how, and again, people will probably give out with this because they don't necessarily have to look exactly like them, but they do need to look kind of similar to believe it. I don't know. I'm not really seeing the physical similarities. But
Alison Oliver. That's just
Alison Oliver is good. Yeah.
She could do something good.
Okay. But a lot to run on this, and it could be just, as Chris astutely points out, newsroom hearsay. Okay, this is very interesting. So True Detective season 5.
Yeah.
This seems more likely in terms of, you know, what we were talking about in Sinead O'Connor. Who's going to be the new lead in the new season?
Okay. Again, still in talks, still reported, I should say, but apparently Nicolas Cage is nearing a deal to be the star of True Detective season 5. Chris's face has had a strong reaction, I think. So am I! Yeah. I read it because I did watch the previous season, True Detective Night Country, which, like, I mean, like, very
Jodie
stylish.
Foster.
Good. Yeah, Jodie Foster, like, great performance, Jodie Foster. She picked up an Emmy and a Golden Globe for this. I'm not really sure on the ending. Again, if anyone's watched it, people will know what I mean. But yeah, I think, God, this could be the one for old Nick. You know what I mean? Like, he's
he's not the devil.
I read it and I was like, this makes sense. And this is kind of exciting, especially because he's not someone, he hasn't done a lot of TV. This is actually only his second lead TV role. His other one that he's done is he's doing the Spider-Man Noir live action for somewhere, which also isn't out yet. This series of True Detective, they're kind of usually set in different places. The last one, obviously, set in Alaska. This one is set to be set in Jamaica Bay Area, but we don't know anything else yet. And usually there is, it's usually two actors kind of facing off against each other. So you don't know if it's Nicolas Cage changing someone else. Mm. Maybe it's just Nicolas Cage. Maybe they're fully changing it up. I don't know. I'm into this.
Yeah. And is Nicolas Cage going to be the detective or the baddie? Or do we know that yet?
I mean, with the lead, I'd imagine the detective. Yeah.
Both.
Or both.
Look at this.
He can make it work.
We're
in a writer's room here. Yeah. That's very interesting. Yeah. I think I'd love to see that. I think other people would. I think everyone in this room certainly agrees.
Yeah. If anyone could do it, it's him. If anyone could kind of reinvigorate it again, I think it's him. I think they're looking at 2026, and Issa Lopez, who worked on the last one as a writer and showrunner, is returning as well. So
great.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, listen, this is Movies and Booze here on Moncrief. John Fardy in. I'm in the company of Fionnuala Jones, Michelle Lawler, and some guy called Chris Wasser.
Every year that you live, that world inside your head will get bigger and brighter and more detailed and complex. You will build cities and countries and continents, and you will fill them with people and faces, real and imagined. You understand? Don't stop there. You fill the whole thing with everyone you ever meet, everyone you ever know, everyone you ever just imagine. It'll be a universe, a whole universe right between my hands.
That's Chris Wasser's meditation app. Ha ha. Of course, it is a clip from The Life of Chuck, which is in cinemas this very week. Chris, tell us more.
I will, but I'll also be careful. So this is based on a 2020 Stephen King short story, probably one of my favourite Stephen King short stories. The thing is barely 50 pages long, so I'm not really sure how Mike Flanagan has managed to make a nearly 2-hour picture out of it. But just as Stephen King did in the novella, it's told backwards in three acts. So act three is actually act one, and that will come last. But or that is played out first. So we, in the first chapter, we see Chiwetel Ejiofor playing this middle school teacher named Marty Anderson, and the world around Marty Anderson is ending. The universe might even be ending. And the internet has gone down. Parts of California have fallen into the sea. The ground is opening up. The weather is slowly killing us. It's pretty bad for all of mankind, John. But around the place, you've got all of these billboards saying Charles Kranz, 39 great years. Thanks, Chuck. And beside this text on all of the billboards and the ads popping up on the telly while the tellys are still working is an image of this handsome, bookish man played by Tom Hiddleston. The only thing is Marty Anderson and the rest of the population, they're like, who the heck is Chuck? And how has he managed to do this, get this viral marketing campaign going at a time when the world is literally ending? So Marty's trying to figure that out. He's trying to deal with parents. You know, he's trying to keep a normal life going, but the parents that he's meeting with for the students that he teaches, they're like, what's the point? Mm. So Marty eventually agrees, what is the point? The world is ending. Why don't I try and, you know, fix my relationship potentially with my ex-wife? And she's played by Karen Gillan. Her name is Felicia. She works as a nurse in a hospital. And even the exterior walls of the hospital where she works is all graffiti saying, thanks, Chuck, for 39 great years. So that's the first chapter. You've got a world ending and people going, who is this guy that keeps popping up around the place? In the second chapter then, you've got Tom Hiddleston as this, again, handsome bookish man who turns out to be an accountant. His name is Chuck, and we see him, he's off on some sort of accountant's weekend. He's taking a break away from it. The sun is shining. He's in the middle of the street enjoying a coffee. He's got a little bit of a headache and it's really bothering him. But he hears this street busker, this drummer playing by herself, and for no reason, he can't understand why he does it, because he's never done anything like this in his life before. He starts dancing in by himself in the middle of people without any sort of prompt whatsoever. And then the third chapter, we go back to this guy Chuck's childhood, where his grandparents are played by Mia Sarah from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, coming out of...
Who we heard there.
Yeah. Oh, no, that's Kate Siegel, actually. Okay. So that's Chuck's teacher. But Mia Sarah has effectively come out of retirement for this role. And Mark Hamill is Chuck's grandfather. Chuck has played... He's about 11 at this point. He's played by a kid named Benjamin Padgett. And we see there's tragedy in Chuck's background. I don't want to give too much away. Mm-hmm. He's raised essentially by grandparents. One of them teaches him a little bit about dance. The other one is... a little bit rougher, has a problem with alcohol and tries to kind of move him away from dance and performance into maths. And he keeps being told as well, like he has a relatively happy upbringing, but he keeps being told, don't go into the attic, don't go into the couple in this house. What does all of that have to do with one another? Yeah. I don't want to say.
No, okay. Yeah. That's good. That's good. Did you like this? Because it sounds, and I did get to see it myself, it But when you describe it that way, it sounds all over the place.
It does sound all over the place.
Is it cohesive?
I think it does. The dots might not always connect as neatly as you'd hope. Some people have compared this to Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life. And I get where they're coming from. I think there's a quote in the trailer as well, like "A wonderful, It's a Wonderful Life for Today." It's not quite as profound as It's a Wonderful Life, but it's the same sort of idea in that the impact that one person can have on the life of everybody that they encounter in the world. And this idea, you heard a school teacher there played by Kate Siegel. She tells Chuck... she's teaching about Walt Whitman at one stage, and she that poem where, you know, we are all wonderful, we contain multitudes. She teaches them about this idea that everyone you encounter, you will build a world for them in your head. And I hope I haven't said too much, but it's this sort of idea: what sort of impact do I have on even someone whose life I only cross for a minute? So the synopsis, it sounds a little bit messy, but trust me, it does come together. It's a bit heavy handed at times. Nick Offerman actually does plays a narrator here, reading directly from the text of the short story, and that over eggs the pudding a little bit. So this thing, it does shoot for the stars, and I think it actually gets there. I thought the performances were gorgeous. I thought Tom Hiddleston, not in it as much as you'd think, but when he is, he gets to dance a lot, and he's pretty damn good at that. She would tell Ezra Ford is the beating heart of this thing. Lovely performance from Carol Lumbly playing this charismatic stranger that always has to be in a Stephen King film. I will say this thing divided the Irish critics room. And after the film, we do have this thing where after the film, John, you'll know about this, we do tend to talk about it for a minute or two afterwards, but then everyone kind of goes their separate ways and we start different conversations. It's almost as if we don't want to infect one another with opinions. With this, a debate, discussion, polite argument, whatever you want to call it, for 20 straight minutes. And nobody wanted to move. There were people who hated it. There were people who were poking holes in the logic. There were people like myself who just thought it was gorgeous. I'd say... if you've listened to this review, thank you. But then don't go else. Go see it. Don't read any more about it. Go in as empty as possible. I know that's a bit of a strange thing to say, but don't explore this anymore. Just sit back, take it all in, enjoy it, because I think it is worthy of your time.
What would you give it as a star rating?
I'd give it 4. Okay. I just think this thing, it wears its heart on its sleeve. It's so unapologetically sentimental. But I love the look of it. I love what Mike Flanagan was. I like that Mike Flanagan has decided to just park the horror for a minute and show a sweeter side of his filmmaking talent, and more, please.
Can I ask,
yes,
is the Stephen King book a horror, or is it soft? And
there's an element, there's a small element. So you know the way I mentioned the fact that they tell the kid not to go into the attic. There's a small element of that, but it is one of those Stephen King stories, a little bit like The Body or like Rita Hayworth in Shawshank Redemption, where there's a darkness there, but you know, it's there's hope too. Yeah. Because again, that this idea that Stephen King is just a horror writer, I've never really been on board with that. The guy can do so much more. And this is a film that, you know, look at the way it's been marketed as well. It's not being marketed as the latest from Stephen King, author of The Shining. It's reminding you that this is the guy who did The Green Mile, and this is the guy who did Stand By Me, stories where, you know, it's all about hope.
And he wrote
Shawshank
Redemption as well.
He wrote Shawshank Redemption, yeah. So it's more about there's no real scare tactics here. This will leave a smile on your face.
Fanula, you haven't got to see this, have you?
No, not yet, but I really want to now.
Okay.
Yeah.
Chris Wasser is giving 4 stars to Life of Chuck, which is in cinemas. He does say don't read or listen to any more about it. If there was time, there is currently a podcast now on the News Talk website called Screen Time or on the radio where you can hear an interview with the aforementioned Tom Hiddleston and Chiwetel Ejiofor. But let's talk no more of that. Fanula, back to you. The paper, which has one of the Gleasons in it. What's going on?
So we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. The paper is, it's not really a follow-up to The Office, but well, it kind of is. It's set in the same universe, starring Jonah Gleason, as you mentioned, focusing on this kind of, I think it's semi-volunteer led newspaper. They're trying to keep going in the wake of an industry that is dying, essentially. That's what kind of connects it back to the original Scranton and Co, whatever we talked about a few weeks ago, and kind of our hopes for it and how we felt about it or whatever. I just found this was interesting, right? So in the States, it's after changing.
Sorry, it's out now.
It's
is
not
it?
Out yet. Okay. I'm pretty sure it's out next week. Okay. In Ireland, this is kind of where it's key and where it might get confusing. It's basically changed its release model in the States, right? So it was going for an episodic release model. I think it was going for the first 4 episodes and then a new episode every week wherever it was airing in the States, NBC. I'll get to where it's airing in Ireland in a sec. But now it's going full binge, which is kind of leading me to believe that it might not be good. Okay. Unfortunately, they're saying that it's because of people who have seen it and the positive responses and stuff like that. But then that kind of begs the question, if it was good, surely it could be event, like kind of reigniting that event television, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I feel like it's really hard for comedies because they don't really exist in that model anymore. They nearly do thrive in a binge model. Mm-hmm. So maybe they're kind of gambling on that people will come to it like they did a Parks and Rec when it was on. I know it's moved around now, but I think it's on the RT player now. Superstore when it came to Netflix, that it was all there and people could just watch it all straight away. In terms of if people want to watch it in Ireland, as far as I'm aware, it hasn't changed in Ireland. I think it's episodes 1 to 4 are going to be available on Now, and then otherwise it's going to be on Sky Max, the first episode September 5th, which is Friday at 9 o'clock. I'm still intrigued. I'm still buying into it. I like the idea that I think the cast are good, even outside of Donald Gleeson. I think I said a couple of weeks ago when we talked about it, like, I'll try anything once. I'll give it a fair shot. But this news has kind of slightly unsettled me and has worried me, because I do want it for Donald as well, and I want it for I want more comedy on TV, you know, like,
absolutely.
And there was a Beauty in the Office, like, I think this could work. The news kind of is not, it's not filling me with joy
and hope. I haven't seen any advanced screeners.
Okay. No.
By the way, on what we were talking about earlier, just to bring back, because there's more text in, and we're being very patriotic today with Sinead O'Connor and indeed the Gleasons, but Eve Hewson for Sinead.
Ooh, nice.
Here's a curveball. She is an Everton fan, so she has that in her favour. Jodie Comer.
Oh, that would work. Nice. That would work very well. Yeah.
Can she sing? Yeah. Again, that goes back to the thing of, like, it doesn't need to be an entirely successful biopic. Like, they don't necessarily have to sing in it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They kind of do, though.
I'm trying to think. I liked Bohemian. Is this where I say I like Bohemian Rhapsody?
No,
different
no.
Okay.
I'm off. I'm going.
Okay. New conversation. Let's start that. See, biopics are so hard. Especially music biopics. They're so hard. Yeah. They're so hard. I like the idea of Jodie.
Yeah, we were all kind of stood up. Well, not, you know, figuratively, when Jodie Comer was mentioned. Mm. And then what's going on at Archer Comics? There's a possible movie.
We're getting a feature adaptation now with Universal Pictures of Archie comic books. All the gang, Betty and the rest of them. I can't remember what the rest of them are called. Archie. I don't know. This is way too old for me.
Yeah,
but
me too. Sorry. I thought you were going to film me in.
So this is from the team behind the Spider-Verse, which is what kind of fills me with joy, because I'm like, that's an interesting, if they're going with that kind of animation style, I think it could be interesting. And the screenwriter is a guy called Tom King. He is an award-winning comic book author. He did Supergirl, Women of Tomorrow, again, for anyone who's into the comic books and knows more about that. Emma Watt is producing. Archie Comics, basically, you know, it's like small town Americana. Mm-hmm. They weren't, like, that line of comics, they were never as successful as a Marvel or whatever. Because it's not superheroes. It's just kind of guys and dolls and their daily lives and, you know, their love lives and stuff like that. Debuted in 1941 with Pep Comics at number 22. 85-year history, which is crazy. I will say,
and they're still in circulation, aren't they?
Yeah. Okay. But the last time they did a kind of adaptation of this, I don't know if it's even fair to call it an adaptation, was Riverdale. Are you familiar with Riverdale? No, don't make yourself from Riverdale. That's what I'm trying to tell you. On Netflix.
People can't see at home. I was squinting wildly.
He was pondering. Yeah. I think it might still be on Netflix.
Rodan at rest.
Well, like, maybe it is worth the watch because it gets so completely and utterly bonkers. Okay. Like, it goes so far off the track of whatever it was meant to be. I think that was a loose adaptation.
Okay.
That wasn't particularly successful. So maybe they're trying to right the wrongs of Riverdale with this as well. So we'll see.
Last one on the Sinead O'Connor biopic. Sarah Bulger would make a great Sinead O'Connor. Interesting. Mm. We have more wine and more movies and more showbiz after the break. Michelle, we have a red. What's going on with the red wine?
So we have a red wine that I suppose you wouldn't say it's cold, but it's definitely cooler than you'd normally drink a red.
Okay.
So this is a Vin de Soif. And if you ever see a liter bottle of wine, that's technically what the French would do as a vin de soif. And soif translates, pardon for everyone who speaks French, as thirsty. So it's considered a soif.
And you said a liter bottle.
And it's a liter bottle. Yeah. You can see on the picture I have, or the bottle I have here, it says 1 liter on the top of it. I mean, they're obviously a litre because they're really large bottles. So the history of vin de soif is actually wines that you would have in a cafe, like a lunchtime wine. So you would find whites, but largely the ones that you see on the market are litre bottles of red. Definitely in that, have a glass, have something to quaff. Mm. But there's also a thing about particularly litre bottles of wine, that they're reds that will go in the fridge. And the reason that you know, or why would you put a wine in the fridge? And normally when I say this, I get most people saying, oh, I hate when they do that when I'm on holidays. Give it to me room temperature.
Yeah.
But in actual fact, there's a lot to be said about putting your red in a fridge and the art of temperature. Mm-hmm. So when you say put it in the fridge, you don't have to have it in there overnight or, you know, for put it in the morning when you're going to drink it in the evening time. It's literally 30 to 40 minutes. And you want to take it down from room temperature, which is like, say, 24, 25, 22, especially even in the wintertime with central heating on, to like 16, 17 degrees. So 30 minutes in the fridge. And what that...
Now, we're not talking about all reds here.
No. Now, you could do all...
In case someone tuned in.
If you were in a Michelin star restaurant, for example, all wines might come out at 17 to 18 degrees because that's the optimum temperature whereby you get a freshness in the wine and yet it's not going to mask any of the tannins. And you know, when someone says, oh, well, what do you mean by tannins? It's that drying sensation in your mouth. So say, for example, you were going to have a cup of cold black tea and after you're like, I can't really think anymore because like your gums are stuck together. That's like really aggressive tannins. And if you put a red wine like Cabernet Sauvignon in the fridge, it'll have the long aggressive tannins. When you put it in the fridge, you mute the fruit flavours. So all you get is mouthfeel. But if you have a red wine that doesn't have aggressive tannins, classic examples, Valpolicella, Fleury, even like an easy drinking Pinot Noir. And what we have here is a blend that I would say typically would be Chardonnay to Pape blend. So Grenache, Cinsault, Carignan, a little bit of Syrah. Has everyone had a little taste of it? Mm-hmm. It's super really juicy.
Nice. Yeah.
It's like it excited me with the juiciness level in it, in that it's really refreshing, really refreshing, really mouthwatering. It makes you go, you know, it's got all those things that you want. And so when you put a red wine that doesn't have low tannins or that does have low tannins in the fridge, you get that really cool, refreshing mouthfeel sensation. And this particular winery, this is from the Catalan area, so right on the Spanish border. Mm-hmm. And this is drier than some parts of North Africa. There's a huge thing of climate change, particularly in this area, whereby you can't actually really grow anything that's a young vine because, I don't know if anyone's a gardener, we were joking earlier about how do you know someone's running a marathon, they tell you, I have an allotment, and I feel like everyone knows I have an allotment because I tell everyone I have an allotment. And this summer, for example, I could, any plants I put in during the summertime, they didn't get, there was not enough rain, so I couldn't really get the roots going on them. And so when, if you have old vines in the Catalan area, you're going to produce really beautiful wines and grapes because the roots go deep. But if you're trying to plant something new, you nearly can't get it to grow. So they've had to do this really innovative way to like retain moisture in the soil. So it's a really interesting part, not just about the leader of wine and the Van der Swaff and chilled reds, but also about how wineries and wine producing regions are reacting to like severe drought.
Yeah.
Like severe. And there's a thing called biochar. I know there's a company in Ireland that do it where you put it into the soil and it retains moisture and then releases it really, really slowly. So look, it's an absolutely gorgeous, juicy summer red. It is really hot in Dublin today. Hopefully everywhere else.
It certainly is. Lafarge La Retro.
No, it's actually pronounced Fionnuala Jones.
That's good. You got a gift, my friend. You got a gift. That was very good. That was good. Well, I have no comeback to that.
No.
Just to compliment you. Fionnuala, did you like the wine?
It is very nice, yeah. I think I prefer the white, but that's just my general preference anyway. I love the fizzes.
The fizz is delicious. And I would say with wines like this, the Irish palate loves Malbecs and Riocas, big, rich, beefy, dry ones. And so a lot of times, this is great if you're having Deb's parties or during the day, you want a nice, light, fun glass of red that no one really has to think about. That's still going to be delicious.
Okay, Chris, did you have a sub?
Oh, it's very tasty because I did get like, it is sort of in the Chateauneuf du Pape school, I think.
Yeah.
And that's my favourite. So, yeah.
Yum.
Yeah.
Good.
Excellent. Okay. Well, we have your next movie to get to, Chris. This is a little flavour of Nobody 2.
What's up, guys? More than you know. You were told to leave. So what are you still doing in town, old man?
I'm here with my family, making memories.
He's making memories, huh?
But there's no need for this. This is all a big misunderstanding.
Be cool! So Bob Odenkirk back as the most unlikely action hero of all time.
That's pretty much it. Yeah, I wasn't expecting nobody when I saw it in 2021, 22.
What happened quickly in that.
I had a good time with it. He is this assassin who is, you know, he's a man with a past and he is trying to lead an ordinary life and trying to hide the fact that he has a very particular set of skills where he can, you know, he can kill men just by looking at them. But when someone breaks into his house, he decides, that's it, I've had enough. He gets revenge on the people who put his family in danger, but he also crosses the path of some very, very violent, very dangerous Russian gangsters, mm-hmm. burns a whole lot of their money at the end, so he's in debt to the wrong people. So there's a story there that you could explore, maybe his background a little bit more or how he's actually going to pay back that debt. The filmmakers behind Nobody 2 have decided to do a little bit of both. So as I say, in the first one, he was trying to, you know, lead an ordinary life. In this one, he's trying to juggle a murderous 9-to-5 with the wholesome family setup. So he thinks he can be, you know, dad and, you know, husband of the year while he's killing people, you know, between 9-to-5. Unfortunately, that is putting a huge strain on his relationship with his wife, Becca. Connie Nielsen, she might have a little bit of a mighty assassin pass as well. We get to explore that a little bit here. And so after, you know, 100 kills over like 6 months, he thinks, you know, my debts are surely paid back. They're not. He still has so many millions to pay back to the Russian gangsters he annoyed. But he thinks, look, I'm reaching burnout status here. I need to book a holiday. Assassins need holidays as well, John. So he decides to book a vacation in this middle America water park that he visited with his dad. His dad's an FBI agent played by Christopher Lloyd. He took him there for a week when he was a kid and he had a great time, himself and his brother Harry, played by RZA. And he thinks, I'll do that for my family. They get there, the place is really run down. You know, he was there like 30, yeah. 40 years beforehand. The place is falling apart, but it doesn't matter. He's got the whole family together. He's, you know, he might improve his relationship with his wife. He is just 10 seconds in the place when he looks at a policeman the wrong way. That policeman is played by Colin Hanks, who might as well have, you know, a, you know, troublemaker sign on his shirt.
Son of Tom.
And you'd know it. This guy only has to open. You see his dad on his face, but and then when he starts talking, it's like it's Tom. But he is a good actor in his own right, I should say. And not only is he trouble, the people that he's working for are trouble. The main baddie in this piece is played by Sharon Stone, who loves Sharon Stone, but she overacts herself into oblivion here. There's no scenery left to chew by the time Sharon Stone is finished. It's this idea that, as I say, trouble never takes a holiday. But can Bob Odenkirk's character, you know, can he be an ordinary guy? He can't. And just all hell breaks loose at this.
So the first one was very successful, I gather.
It was very well put together. The best thing about these films are they're short and they're sweet. They only talk when they need to. There's no over-explaining it. You get it. This guy's an assassin. He's also trying to lead an ordinary life. Go. Give me a bad guy, go. And the first one was very good at blending the action, you know, that close quarters action that the John Wick films do so well. Bob Odenkirk, as I say, turned out to be just a revelation in that role. And I actually had a better time with that first Nobody film than I did with any of the John Wicks.
Okay.
But this one, there's just a sense that, has this film been tampered with a bit in post-production? Some of the dialogue, there's ADR that doesn't really match. Like, you're listening to dialogue, but you're like, that person's clearly saying something else. Have there been rewrites after this thing was finished? The joke is a bit rustier. There's a bit too much talk at times. But at the same time, I do like Bob. You know, I do like watching Saul, you know, kick ass on screen. Connie Nielsen gets a bit more to do. And look, you'll never have a bad time watching Christopher Lloyd. Christopher Lloyd, you know, God love him at this point. Like, he is slowing down a little bit, you know, but he still has that spark. And he still, you know, there is a sense that, you know, okay, this guy is enjoying himself here. I think we should leave it there. Yeah. I think maybe the joke has run its course. Bob has had his fun. I don't know if you could maybe get a third one out of it. But look, it's fine. It passes the time.
And Sharon Stone is doing what?
She is a villain. So she is the main guy. The last time around, we had some scary Russian gangsters. This time around, we just have a very scary Sharon Stone. But every scene that she's in, she's just kind of, you know, arms all over the place. It's a Nicolas Cage type performance. Mm. And again, I love Sharon Stone. But
get her in True Detective.
Right. Okay. Put her as the villain in True Detective and Nicolas Cage. And it might be okay. With this, I just thought it's just that little bit too over the top.
Mm.
And I hate saying that again because it is so nice to see her on the big screen. But I wasn't too sure about this. There is a sense that, okay, you've had your fun with this, let's move on. Because the last thing I wanted to do is, remember that in the original John Wick, it was like, this man with a very, you know, mysterious past. He's had all these bad things happen to him. The dog dying, isn't it? You know, it's just the last step. And then he goes out and kills everyone. Yeah. The worst thing that they did was build a whole lore around this. You know, and
a universe.
There was no need for that. Don't do that with this.
Okay.
Just leave it.
So, Nobody 2, it's in cinemas from today.
It's in cinemas now, yeah.
And what are you going to say stars-wise?
3.
Okay.
Yeah, three. Solid, okay. 3.
Solid 3. Yeah. Chris is using a qualifying adjective.
Yeah, not a wobbly 3, a solid
adjective.
3.
Is it a quantifying or qualifying adjective? Sure. Any grammarians in the room? Any grammarians anywhere? No, we'll battle on. A solid 3, Chris is giving Nobody 2, which is in cinemas. En route to Fionnuala's last piece of showbiz news, Michelle, someone was saying that I was laughed at in college when we were all novices drinking and... I put red wine in the fridge. People were absolutely horrified. I couldn't live it down for years. God, the people things get
ahead of her time.
Yeah, clearly. Michelle, are you a Bob Odenkirk fan, by the way? Did you like Better Call Saul or did you ever watch it?
My other half thinks I'm a fool for accent. Like, I would say I boycott it nearly.
Okay, fair enough.
I had one bad experience. I'm like, I don't need this in my life.
That's okay. Now, Fionnuala, I just want to end with you because Rivals, the TV show on Disney earlier this year or last year, which was
last year, I think.
What Gilly Cooper.
Yeah.
So divided people. Some people loved it. I thought it was great. Had a great cast. Danny Dyer was in it. There was lots of the Irish chap. What was his
name?
Aidan Turner. But there's some really exciting casting news for season 2.
Some big names. Hayley Atwell is joining the cast for season 2, as well as Rupert Everett leaving Emily in Paris. He said, you know what, I can be Rupert Everett somewhere else and it's going to be Rivals. They're doing principal photography at the minute, underway in the UK. I kind of fell off Rivals, but we were talking a bit about it off air and it seems like you and Chris were telling me to go back to it, so I will. But Hayley Atwell is going to be playing Helen Gordon, who is Rupert Campbell Black's ex-wife and mother of his 2 children. And then Rupert Everett is going to be playing Malise Gordon, the role of her husband, sorry, Malise Gordon, who's Campbell Black's former show jumping coach and mentor. So and they're always fun. So.
What didn't you like about it?
I just thought the first episode just seemed very naff or something. I don't know. It all seemed a bit like everyone was too knowing in the room. Am I too cynical? I am. Maybe I need to lean into it.
No, I think the first episode is just this mad cartoon.
It was so cartoonish,
but
I thought.
It settles into something that's really moving, quite sweet, gets the best performance out of Danny Dyer. You would not believe how good he is in this.
Yeah.
And I thought once it settles, it's actually terrific television.
Yeah, because there is a slight, you know, jolly holly sticks and we all go home and spank each other.
Yeah.
That Gilly Cooper kind of thing.
Which I know is the point of the book as well. So I'm like not trying to be, but okay, I will go back to it. You have convinced me with that.
Yeah, no, you'll get into it, but Rupert Everett, I think that's an inspired cast.
Yeah,
he was in this building a while ago talking to Pat Kenny. He has just become the greatest rock on tour. He's just a delight. Yeah, so I think we're out of time, unfortunately. God, how does Sean leave this studio every Friday surrounded by movies and booze? But that is it for this week. My thanks to Niamh Hamill, Aidan McKelvey, Simon Tierney, and of course Michael George Martin Quilligan, who was at the sound desk today.
Movies and Booze on Moncrief.
Of all the gin joints in all the world, she walks into mine.
A martini, shaken, not stirred.
I ate his liver with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.